On a summer's day, a horse crosses a forest glade. A barrel-chested native man clad in a fringed buckskin jacket sits astride the horse. A horse-drawn wagon laden with furs follows behind the lead rider, while another native horseman brings up the rear. The three men exchange the furs for goods as a trader looks on. When the trader climbs aboard his own wagon, the barrel-chested man approaches him, and the trader shakes some coins from his purse. The trader places one coin in the man's outstretched hand. The native looks at it, then signals one of his men to take a box from the trader's wagon. The trader looks on, chagrined, as the man takes the box away. The barrel-chested man says, "You Americans shouldn't try to cheat me." Riders appear in the distance. "We have company," says one of the natives. The riders draw closer at a gallop.
"Give them my regards.
I wonder how much they'd give me for your hide.
My hide is out of fashion."
"It's always a pleasure, Joseph."
Joseph, the barrel-chested man, leads his party away hastily. The National Film Board of Canada presents Mistress Madeline. A pretty native woman swims in a river.
"Come on, Robert. It's beautiful."
"Now, why do I get wet?"
"Oh, but the water is very dry today."
She swims toward Robert and touches his legs.
"I think I'll use these twigs for my dam."
"You're not that beaver."
"No, and it's a good thing. Your Uncle Joseph would probably trap me and trade me to your papa for a kittle."
"No, he wouldn't."
"Maybe your father would give him two kittles for me."
The woman kisses Robert's foot and beams at him. Afterward, on shore, she holds a baby.
"So, you don't like to get wet, eh? I guess you cannot be baptized with your sister then."
"Do they make you go swimming?"
"No, but I have heard they put water on you." "It will not bother Maggie. She likes to be wet."
"Oh, no, no, sweetheart."
Later, as a piper plays in dress uniform, two boats sail downriver toward him. Rupert's Land, 1850. The pretty native woman stands nearby, smiling. Beside her, a man crouches with Robert as people mill around excitedly.
"It doesn't look like they have enough room this year for your mother's new dress. However, I think there might just be something for you."
Robert's father stands up and watches as the boats approach, then drop their sails. A vicar stands aboard one of the boats. Ashore, a gray-haired man approaches Robert's father.
"Well, looks like the vicar's survived the journey, sir."
"Aye, Charles. Now, if he wanted to make a good first impression on his new congregation, he'd get out and walk the rest of the way."
Charles laughs at the joke and throws an arm around the native woman's shoulder. As the boats draw near, a raggedly dressed woman with long, unkempt hair hurries to the riverbank, staring with haunted eyes.
"Let's get these boats packed up and turned around quickly, Mr. Kirk. For to make it back before freeze-up."
"Yes, sir. There's not a mountain to be loaded into them, I'm afraid."
"McGregor!"
The ragged woman races toward the gray-haired man.
"McGregor!"
Kirk and McGregor look toward her. She asks, "Where are my sons?"
"Now, Mary."
"Oh, Mary, Loon calls at nightfall. Do you hear me? Loon calls at nightfall!"
Kirk summons soldiers, who chase the woman off. Satisfied, McGregor looks toward the boats. Carrying several passengers and supplies, the boats nose into shore as McGregor moves forward to greet the vicar.
"Shall we?"
"Yes."
Charles and Robert follow McGregor and the vicar up the riverbank. But the native woman pauses to look at Loon curiously. Her piercing eyes stare back. Later, inside a large fortified compound, Charles sips a cup of tea at a desk as the native woman approaches him, smiling. He smiles as she models a dress for him.
Here she is, my wild prairie flower.
It is all yours, sir.
He returns to his paperwork. Then she sits beside his desk and picks up a brooch.
Who was that strange woman by the river?
It involves Chief Factor McGregor. He had two sons by her.
That woman?
Yes, he sent the pair of them back to Edinburgh to be educated. Well, they both died of ship's fever during the passage.
Poor woman.
And he was trying to do the best for his children. But I suppose she just couldn't understand that. She lost her senses. She went mad, went back to her people.
What a sad affair.
Yes, and one best not spoken of. It was a long time ago.
She proudly wears the brooch on her new dress.
Well, what do you think?
I think you're beautiful.
She smiles at him happily.
And Jesus,
later, at the baptism,
was baptized, went up straightway out of the water, and lo, the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting upon him. And lo, a voice from heaven saying, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Baptize thee, Robert Charles Mackay. I baptize thee, Francis Margaret Mackay, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and the Holy Ghost."
Afterward, drinks are served.
Well, Mr. McGregor, you must feel comforted with the arrival of Vicar Adams in these parts.
As Frances lies in her mother's arms, another woman admires the baby.
Let me hold my little godchild. You can grow old with her, but I only have a couple of days.
Oh, must you go so soon, cousin? I feel like everyone is leaving me.
It's Albert. He thinks a factor shouldn't leave his post for too long, otherwise it'll be gone when he gets back.
He's probably right.
On the eve of my retirement, after 30-odd years in this country, I can assure you, sir, this land will run out of furs to sell long before you run out of souls to save.
Especially if the half-breeds continue to sell furs to the Americans. They have no loyalty in their blood whatsoever.
Gentlemen, not another evening of furs and politics.
You're quite right, Mistress Mackay. This is an occasion for celebration. Shall we?
Mistress Mackay, the native woman, glances smugly at Kirk on the way out.
Yes, Charles and I will be off to Britain in a couple of days.
So it is you who will replace Mr. McGregor. You must be very proud of your husband, Mrs. Mackay.
I am very proud. He has a natural gift for this business. He's just like a half-breed.
Kirk glowers at her jibe, and the others look away in embarrassment.
If I may be permitted then, Mr. McGregor, a toast to friends, new and old.
To friends.
Outside, Robert plays with a ball. After the meal, and without the vicar, the men retire to smoke and drink port.
The focus is shifting to the south, and even the savages know it.
Yes, well, it's difficult to stop free trade if we can't afford to match American prices.
Every single fur they take is money gone from us. The fact is, the Indian and half-breed bastards are breaking company law, and a week or two in the stockade would do much to remind them.
It's all blather and hot air, Kirk. You haven't even got anyone to put in the stockade. It's all very well to bluster about force, but the buggers are not about to stand still waiting to be caught. Now, if you could find a way to catch the slippery devils...
It wouldn't be hard if it wasn't for the fact that Mr. Mackay's brother-in-law seems to be blessed with a degree of protection not enjoyed by...
Just what are you implying, sir?
Joseph Gagnon is a known leader of the half-breed free traders. Yet he has not been arrested, despite the fact that we know he has been taking furs to the American side.
Your patrols have come up with nothing more conclusive than gossip.
Easy, easy, gentlemen. If the company's to survive and prosper, its rights must be enforced. However, you'd best remember we've created here a race of over 5,000 of these mixed bloods. We're grossly outnumbered. All I can say is thank God they don't know their own strength.
Mistress Mackay and her cousin are next door.
I don't understand. You and Albert have been together for years.
I know it's silly, but the vicar was upset with us. He told us that we're not married at all and are living in sin.
Quelle audace.
It's the same for Charles and me, she says.
Has nobody explained to the reverend gentleman that marriage comme il faut was impossible with nobody to perform the ceremony?
Oh, but it makes no difference to him. A sin is a sin in the eyes of God.
Well, then it's simple. While we've got the vicar here, we'll all get married properly. Of course, we'll have to see if our husbands are up to it.
That evening, the Mackays leave McGregor's house.
I hope the children didn't run you ragged.
Not at all. They breathe new life into an old man.
Well, thank you again for arranging all of this.
It's the very least I could have done, Mistress Madeleine.
Yes, thank you very much, sir.
And Charles, I'll have a moment of your time once you get the wee folk settled away.
Certainly.
Good night.
The Mackays leave and walk across a compound.
Joseph is suspected of free trading. In fact, we all know it. Now, Madeleine, if they catch him below the border, I couldn't guarantee he'd get a fair trial. They'd have to string him up to the nearest tree.
For a few furs? It can be costing the company that much.
Madeleine is making a mockery of me. It's a matter of principle. He totally denies the company's authority.
Joseph never did care much for authority.
Your brother is becoming an embarrassment to me. Now, he could jeopardize my position with the company. Madeleine, I've worked hard for this opportunity, and I can't let your brother stand in my way.
You remind me of a hunter in the middle of a chase. Nothing else exists on earth. You are just like Joseph.
Perhaps. I do want this for both of us. I just want to make you happy.
You have. And if I can, I will try to talk to Joseph. For his sake as much as yours. But if he pays no attention to the laws of England, I doubt whether he will pay much attention to his little sister.
Charles nods, conceding the point.
Come on, son. You're home.
Charles kisses Madeleine at their door. Soon after, he joins McGregor on his porch.
Mr. McGregor?
McGregor considers his next words.
You're a fine, hard worker, laddie. And you learn fast.
Thank you, sir.
And it's because of this that I'm about to blunder into areas of your life that no one else will speak about to your face.
Charles looks at him, puzzled.
Things change, lad. And how we feel about it doesn't matter a whisker.
Yeah, forgive me, sir. I don't understand your point.
There wasn't a cleric here 8 or 10 years ago. And she's a lovely, lovely young woman, your lady is. But had this post not been as isolated as it is, there would have been repercussions.
Well then, now that there is a vicar here, we'll just quietly make arrangements to marry before I leave.
You're only listening, laddie. You marry Madeleine, and there'd be nothing said. But you'll finish your days here with neither transfer, promotion, nor advancement.
In the name of God, she's my wife.
Aye. According to the customs of the country. But this country is changing, laddie buck. Think on it. Say nothing till you've had a chance to see the way the wind blows in London. If need be, I can make some important introduction.
Charles is stunned by these words.
I know it's painful, lad. In London, however lovely she is, she's nae but a wee bit of brown.
As MacGregor rises and enters his house, Charles ponders his predicament. Walking across the compound, Charles is depressed and lost in thought. Still struggling with his thoughts, he reaches his home, but hesitates at the door. Later, Madeline sleeps in bed. But when Charles slips in beside her, she turns toward him, snuggling into his arms.
You're cold.
He strokes her hair gently.
You're going to put me back to sleep again. And we have so few nights left before you leave. You're so quiet. Are you missing us already? I know you must, but I don't want you to go. It will be all right. It is good to have something to look forward to. I love you.
She kisses him. Content, she snuggles back on his chest, but Charles stares fretfully into the darkness. Days later, men launch one of the boats. With Charles and MacGregor aboard, the boat moves away slowly.
Stay here with Maggie.
Madeline rushes toward the vessel.
Charles!
And tosses him a native necklace.
Remember me by it. Wear it when you return.
Charles nods and smiles weakly as the boat moves off.
So I will know you.
Charles toys with the necklace, examining it, then tucks it away. As the boat recedes, Madeline looks on. Other onlookers turn away as the boats move off upriver. Loon sits behind Madeline at a distance. When Madeline turns and sees the woman looking at her, their eyes meet for a moment, but then Loon runs off. Madeline looks after her pensively, then turns to watch the boats as they draw further away. Elsewhere, a native woman scrapes at an animal hide strung tautly over a wooden frame. Nearby, a young native boy struggles to carry a bucket of water past Joseph. The native woman tells Joseph, "Sometimes I wish you weren't such a good hunter." He responds, "I tried to miss a few times, but the buffalo kept getting in the way. Even Philippe couldn't miss." Joseph's brother, Philippe, grins.
"Papa! Papa!"
A boy alerts Joseph to two native men approaching in a canoe. "It's time for business," Joseph says, and walks toward a dock by the water. One of the men in the canoe shakes Joseph's hand, then unloads bundles of pelts onto the dock. Joseph remarks, "The Americans will give us much more for these than the company will." At night, in the company compound, Kirk sings as he walks in a storehouse full of furs, holding a tin mug and a lantern.
The dashing wave shall cease its roar, ere she to me a stranger.
He peers through a window toward the Mackay home, where lights are burning.
Shall still retain in sleeping or in waking.
Kirk sits down and stares at the house.
My love again, for whom my heart is breaking.
Putting the mug to his lips, he drains it. In the morning, Robert plays with a ball outside the Mackay house. Inside, Madeline kneads dough. She wipes her cheek, leaving a white flour mark there. Then answers the door. Kirk stands on the threshold.
Good afternoon, Mistress Madeline.
Good afternoon.
May I come in for a moment?
She looks at him nervously.
Yes, of course.
Smells good. Scones?
When he enters, she eyes him with contempt, then closes the door.
What's it been? 3 months since Mr. Mackay left?
Yes, I believe so.
I haven't seen much of you lately. I imagine it must be difficult without a man around.
I manage.
Well, I just want you to know that if I can be of any assistance to you, in any way, I would be pleased to do so.
She meets his gaze unflinchingly.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. That's very kind of you.
Then turns away coldly.
Charlie, have you been in contact with your brother Joseph lately?
No. He seldom visits here.
That is true.
Kirk stares at her, then reaches to wipe the flour from her cheek, but she turns her head angrily.
For a moment there, I thought you were a white woman. It makes no difference to me.
I must find Robert.
Madeline walks to the door and opens it.
Good day.
When Kirk leaves the house, Madeline removes her apron. Descending the steps in front of the house, Kirk looks up curiously as 4 men on horseback enter the compound. Madeline emerges from the house and sees the riders. The first rider leads a horse carrying a native man whose hands are tied. Kirk looks him over. The prisoner looks at Madeline glumly. Kirk checks over the prisoner's captured goods, then moves toward him.
American product, I presume. Louis Goulet, isn't it?
The prisoner doesn't acknowledge Kirk.
Well, Louis, it looks as if you'll be cooling your heels with us here for quite some time. At the very least, until you pay the import duty due on that merchandise.
Kirk glowers at Louis, then waves the group onward as Madeline watches from her doorway.
You know him, don't you?
I grew up near his family.
He's an associate of Joseph's, is he not?
Madeline stares at him, expressionless, and Kirk regards her balefully, then stalks off.
He's in here.
Later, in Louis's cell.
It is terrible to see you like this.
Carrying a plate of food, Madeline sits down next to him. placidly, he looks down at the plate, then back at her.
When I was a child, I used to ride horseback to get away from my problems. I would ride so fast that the wind would scream in my ears, and all I could hear was the pounding of my heart. It always seemed to blow the worries right out of my body. I wish this was not happening, Louis.
Louis looks away sadly. Later, outside, a man leads a horse hauling a wagon. Madeline is in a general store, buying cloth.
Yes, this will be lovely.
Very well, Mrs. McKay. I'll put that in your account then.
Thank you.
Madeline's smile disappears when the store door opens.
Oh, let me help with those.
It's not necessary. I can manage.
I insist.
When Kirk grips her shopping basket, Madeline releases it reluctantly and leaves the store. The storekeeper watches curiously as Kirk follows her. Outside, as Madeline crosses the compound, Kirk hurries to keep up.
I am sorry about your friend Louis. Oh, she's a thief for sure, but he's of little consequence. It is a pity no one's offered to help him.
What are you suggesting?
Oh, come now, Madeline. I'm sure you understand my intentions clearly. There's no point in us both spending the coming winter in hibernation.
Mr. Kirk, I'd rather freeze to death.
You might not fancy me, but it is a generous offer. Besides, you should feel obliged to help one of your own kind.
She glares at him, appalled, then pulls her basket away and walks off. Troubled, she walks toward her house. Philippe and Joseph are waiting for her.
Welcome, brothers.
Madeleine, danse.
Joseph looks at Kirk with contempt.
I see Charles has left you in good hands.
He's nothing.
Joseph? I hope you're here on business.
I would not come here for my pleasure.
Kirk turns his back and walks away. Inside, Joseph pulls out money.
That should cover the import duty your company demands of Louis. Make sure he is released immediately.
There's been a misunderstanding. When Charles gets back...
A native servant brings tea.
He will stop this.
Charles will do nothing. Charles is the company. Do you think it's an accident Louis was arrested while he is away?
They don't care about Louis. It is you they want. They intend to make an example of you, Joseph. And they will if you don't stop.
They are a company of thieves.
The company owns this land.
They don't own me.
The old days are gone. This isn't a wild country anymore. You and Philippe have to realize that.
Look
at you, says Joseph.
My
own sister. You disgrace your family. Your own people. You treat like servants. Madeline stands.
You speak of disgrace. You, free traders, outlaw, to hell with you. Let them have you. Let them have you.
As Joseph and Philippe leave, Madeline watches. Joseph stomps away, leading his horse, and bumps into a passerby. Furious, Madeline closes the door. As time goes by, Joseph continues trading. Winter falls, and snowflakes begin to coat the earth. Soon, snow blankets the ground around the company compound. Inside her home, Madeline reads to Robert.
Do you like this story?
Yes.
Well, when night came again, Robert curled his body around his new friend to protect her from the icy night winds.
Later, Madeline sews in front of a fire. And thinks. Soon, the ice on the river breaks up, and geese fly north. A buffalo calf munches on tender spring grass. Madeline plays with Francis, who's begun to walk. Madeline hurries down a path with her children. All are dressed in their finest clothes and are smiling happily.
Come on. Maggie, stand up.
The two boats have returned and maneuver toward the shore against the current. As Madeline and the children watch excitedly, Charles climbs out of one of the boats. Shaking Kirk's hand, he glances casually toward his family, then beckons to Kirk. Madeline watches Charles happily. Reaching out, Charles takes a woman's hand and helps her out of the boat. She's young, very pretty, and dressed in fine clothes. Madeline frowns, puzzled, as Charles fusses over the woman. As Madeline watches, Charles whispers to Kirk, who looks at Madeline, then walks toward her. Protectively, Madeline pulls her children closer. As he walks away, Charles glances at his family, then turns aside. Kirk approaches. Faces Madeline.
Come with me, Madeline. Chief Factor Mackay wishes you to wait in your quarters.
Stunned, Madeline takes her children's hands and leads them away, followed by Kirk. Loon watches them walk away. Inside Madeline's house, Kirk watches as she sits down, shocked.
You needn't worry, Madeline. These will be my quarters now. There's still plenty of room for you and the children.
Get out.
Charles enters the room, his eyes darting nervously.
Mr. Kirk.
Welcome home. Mistress Mackay.
As Kirk leaves, Charles faces Madeline. Charles moves to close the door. Steeling himself, he turns toward her, carrying three presents. She ignores him, so he approaches his children. Robert looks at him solemnly. And Francis smiles shyly. Awkwardly, Charles turns toward Madeline.
These are for you and the children. I've come to explain.
It has already been explained to me.
I'm chief factor now.
I am your wife.
Eyes blazing, she stares him down, and he cowers before her, then sits.
In
isn't in the fashion of the country. Yes, you are, of course you are. But I... Well, I'm legally married now, Madeline. It can't be as it was before.
Are you in love with her?
He looks away.
Oh, God, Charles, what have you done?
Well, we met in London. Her uncle's one of the directors of the company.
Madeline's eyes are wet with tears.
What has happened to you?
Look, I can't blame you for hating me, but you must try and understand. It's best for all of us, Madeline. Look, I'm in a position to take care of you. I've already made arrangements. There's a small farm on the outskirts of the settlement. You and the children will be comfortable, and we can have time there together. Madeline, I love you. I want to make you happy.
Madeline stares in disbelief.
You should have just stuck a knife in my heart. It would have been less painful.
She bolts from her chair, rushes to get the children, and leaves. Outside, Madeline hurries across the compound, carrying Francis and leading Robert by the hand. She sinks to her knees, overwhelmed with grief. Loon appears and regards her with pity. Gathering the family into her arms, Loon rocks them, her eyes filled with sorrow. Later, Madeline drives a cart across a meadow. Loon sits in the back, holding the children. In the evening, they make camp, and Madeline sits by a small fire with a blanket around her shoulders, thinking. Loon sits beside her, smiling. But Madeline looks away, sadly. The next day, they continue on their way through the forest. Later, they enter Joseph's encampment. A native woman emerges from a cabin.
Madeline?
Madeline smiles at the woman, who approaches, then gives her a warm hug. When Robert runs over to another native boy who is digging in a vegetable garden, the boy looks at him suspiciously. The two regard each other solemnly for a moment. Then the other boy drops his hoe, and Robert tosses him a ball. Later, inside the cabin, the woman who hugged Madeline prepares a pot of tea. The two boys sit playing checkers while Loon looks on. Nearby, as a young girl watches, the native woman pours tea into Madeline's tin mug. She takes a sip. The woman puts the kettle down.
You are probably used to your tea in fine china. Tea has never tasted better than this. Remember, Sarah, I grew up here.
Do you have many pretty dresses?
Madeline smiles warmly.
I have some.
Could I see them? I want to learn how to be a lady like you and marry a rich man like Mr. Mackay.
Madeline frowns.
Charles, is he well?
Loon listens to their conversation.
Once, a man found the most perfect bark for a canoe. He was good with his hands, so he made a very special one. It was lighter, faster, and stronger than any other. There was one little problem, though. The paddle he made was plain. The canoe didn't mind, but the man wanted a better one. It was then an evil voice spoke to him from within. It told him of an island forest where paddles grew like trees. When the man and the canoe arrived, he couldn't believe what he saw. He jumped off the canoe and ran among them, trying to find the very best one. But whenever he would find one he liked, he'd see another one that was even better. The man never got off the island.
Bitter tears run down Madeline's cheeks. Meanwhile, Joseph, Philippe, and Louis return from a trading trip. Nearby, unseen by the travelers, a lone man spots the group. Concealing himself, he watches them pass by. At the camp, a native girl crushes nuts with a wooden mallet. Loon scrubs clothes near the riverbank. As Sarah hangs sheets over a line. From hiding behind the sheets, Joseph grabs Sarah playfully, gripping her in a bear hug. Sarah runs to greet Philippe and Louis. Emerging from the cabin, Madeline smiles at Philippe and Louis as they arrive.
Hello, Madeline.
She smiles at Louis's greeting, then frowns as Joseph approaches. Carrying an axe, Madeline walks away from her brother toward a woodpile. She swings the axe and misses.
Son of a bitch.
You're out of practice, Madeline. A woman of your position should have someone doing it for you.
I thought they would have shot you by now.
I hope you're not disappointed. Maybe they've lost interest in me, too.
You're enjoying this, aren't you, brother? Well, go ahead. Have a good time. It's all you're doing.
Charles puts you aside and you blame me.
How can he be chief factor with a thief for a brother-in-law?
When did he talk of marriage to you?
Madeline walks away.
Open your eyes. You know the truth as well as I. Don't blame me because you've just discovered you're a half-breed.
Furious, he swings the axe and splits a piece of wood. Back at the company compound, Charles stares moodily at a window. Pulling out the necklace Madeline gave him when he left, he inspects it, then lays it on the table. He looks up and continues to gaze out the window. At the cabin, Philippe plays a fiddle as the children dance, and Loon looks on, smiling. When Robert takes Loon by the hand, she joins the dance.
Oh,
Nearby, Madeline walks in the woods, carrying a bouquet of wildflowers. As she picks a flower, she looks up, startled, as a rider approaches. It's Charles.
I'm sorry, I hope I didn't frighten you. I had to see you. Can't get you out of my mind.
She avoids his eyes.
I hate myself for what I've done to you. It's as if I'm... It's as if I don't even know who I am anymore. I was so far away from you. I was alone. I was afraid. I was afraid I wouldn't get my appointment.
But you denied us entirely. So cruelly.
I don't know. For some reason, then, it felt like it could all fit together. But when it came time to see you again, I didn't know how to approach it. I didn't know what to do. I'm sorry.
I defended you to my family, to my people, because I knew you as a kind and good man, but you have humiliated me. You have made it all seem so meaningless.
Come with the children. Take the farm. I need you. Madeline, your brother can't provide sanctuary indefinitely.
What do you mean?
You belong near me.
That night, Frances sleeps in bed as Madeline lies beside her, cradling Robert and staring into the darkness, thinking. Meanwhile, at the compound...
And they had a whole cartload coming right from the south.
Why didn't you arrest them? Ach, you're a spineless moron! Get your men together if you're capable of such a simple task and be quick about it!
Kirk fumes as the man walks off. As dawn breaks, riders streak across the landscape. Meanwhile, Loon sits beside the water. Suddenly, she looks up and sees something in the distance.
Astum. Astum!
A man leads a horse into a clearing and comes upon Joseph's wagon. The man stops beside the wagon and inspects its cargo. Kirk leads his horse into the clearing. A third man and his horse pass. Meanwhile, in bed, Sarah turns sleepily toward Joseph. As Kirk's men enter, Joseph goes for his gun.
Go ahead. Try it.
Philippe is also held at gunpoint. Kirk enters, then cocks a pistol.
Demogisk.
Up in a loft, Madeline awakens.
Joseph Gagnon, put your pants on.
Staring coldly at Kirk, Joseph moves to obey.
Joseph? Que guantante totemak?
Move it, you thieving half-breeds.
At gunpoint, Joseph, Philippe, and Sarah walk out of the cabin. Up in the loft, having warned the children, Madeline steals down a ladder toward the cabin floor. Outside...
I'm disappointed in you, Joseph. I was hoping you'd put up a better fight than that. And I could have shot you two bastards.
And it would have been my duty.
Unseen, Madeline walks to the door with a rifle.
Come on now, we haven't got all day. There's enough contraband up there to have these two flogged and put away forever.
You cannot take my son!
Loon rushes Kirk with a pitchfork and is shot. Madeline fells the gunman, then points her weapon at Kirk. Sarah, Joseph, and Philippe watch, astonished, as Kirk drops his pistol. Kirk's remaining henchman puts his rifle down. Sarah unties Joseph and Philippe as Kirk stares down the barrel of Madeline's gun.
Tell your company to stay away. You cannot enforce your laws on us. You do not speak for us. If you return, our people will fight, and we have more strength than you. And tell Chief Hector Mackay that I belong here.
Joseph listens to his sister's words. Madeline lowers her rifle.
Get out of here. Go!
Kirk slinks away. Madeline moves to Sarah's side. Her face filled with sorrow, Madeline sinks to her knees. She reaches out and touches Loon's hair, pulling it back from her lifeless eyes. Later, adults and children gather solemnly around Loon's grave. One by one, they walk away. But Madeline remains.
Slowly.
Inside the cabin, Joseph wears a buffalo robe and pretends to hunt.
Closer. They think I am a strange buffalo, not a strange man. Closer.
The children look on, smiling.
And then
he throws off the robe and pounces on Robert.
And then around the wrists and around the ankles and up the big fat belly. And when it's all done, we have all the meat we need. And then I sell the rope to the Yankees.
Madeline sits and gazes off with a faraway look. As Joseph takes her hand, she looks up at him and gets to her feet. Brother and sister waltz together slowly. But Madeline's face is filled with sadness.
I loved him very much.
I
This described version of Mistress Madeline was created by Audio Vision Canada. The narrative description was written by Peter Agnes, narrated by Valerie Hunter, and produced by Marco Soren. For other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audio Vision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Madeline, Mireille Deglin. Charles, Neil Monroe. Joseph, Harry Daniels. Kirk, Alan Williams. McGregor, Victor Cowie. Sarah, Winona Stevenson. Loon, Macca Kleist. Philippe, Ken Charlette. Louis, Jerry Martin. Robert, Danelle Swampy. Vicar, Peter Jordan. Renel, Joy Keeper. André, Daniel Chartrand. Emily, Jennifer Chaboyer. Directed by Aaron Kim Johnston. Written by Anne Cameron and Aaron Kim Johnston. Produced by Norma Bailey. Director of Photography, Ian Elkin. Editors, Judy Krupansky and Norma Bailey. Art Director, Michelle Convey. Original music composed by Pierre Guérin. Assistant Editor, Kelly Saxberg. Editing Consultant, Lara Mazur. Historical Consultant, Jennifer Brown. Script Editors, Sharon Rees and Norma Bailey. Sound Editors, Gloria Thorsteinson and Wojtek Kliss. Assistant Sound Editor, Kelly Saxberg. Foley Artist, Andy Malcolm. Re-recording, Clive Perry, Wayne Finnecan Productions. Lab, Midcan. Titles and subtitles, Stephen Rosenberg. The producers would like to thank Lower Fort Garry National Park, Environment Canada Park, Parks Manitoba, the 3rd Battalion Royal Canadian Regiment, York Boat Society of Manitoba, and St. Francis Xavier Historical Society. Pre-production supervisor, Lara Mazur. Studio administrator, Cindy Forcon. Executive producer, Ches Yetman. Produced with the participation of the Manitoba Jobs Fund and the Manitoba Government Employees Association. Mistress Madeline, a National Film Board of Canada production. Copyright 1986.